This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me live in studio. He is a celebrated award-winning local author and historian, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com, and we are exploring the top 25 most significant Civil War battles that took place here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Today we're going to talk about the Battle of Fort Stedman, which I have never heard of, so I'm looking forward to that. But before we get to that, you what's the latest on your trips and lectures?
Yeah, we've got a class, this Virginia History 101 class, and you're teaching a class too, right?
Right now, yeah. I'm teaching local history.
Going?
It's going great. A terrific group of people. We got about 50 people. We get together every Wednesday night over at the Darden School, a beautiful classroom there. Great, great people. Some are literally brand new to this community.
Right.
They've been living here for a few weeks.
Right.
And others are natives. So
right.
It's a great mix of terrific people. And we have a couple of nights, a couple of weeks left of that. And the next semester, I'll be doing a course on the history of Virginia. But your history of Virginia is going on right now.
That's right. It's going on right now. And it's every Thursday. We also have about 50 folks. And at the very end, we have a travel session. We like to organize these travel sessions, so it's kind of like a field trip. And this is happening on Thursday, November 18th. We're going to go down and see really the two premier James River plantations, Shirley and Berkeley, on the very same day. So it's going to be a fun-filled trip down there alongside the James River. Shirley is pretty amazing. I think folks don't realize how old some of these plantations are. Shirley was founded in 1613, and that's only six years after Jamestown was founded. So this place is really old. It's absolutely gorgeous. It survived Bacon's Rebellion. It survived the American Revolution, survived the Civil War. Berkeley, which is right nearby, they're virtually adjacent to each other. Berkeley was the site of America's first Thanksgiving. And just in case there are folks from Massachusetts listening, America's first Thanksgiving here in Virginia was in 1619, and that's many years before the Puritans and Indians up in Massachusetts, many years earlier. It's also the birthplace of President William Henry Harrison. It was the birthplace of one of the signers of the Declaration, his father, the father of William Henry Harrison. And it's also the ancestral estate of William Henry Harrison's grandson, who was also a president of the United States. So these are amazing places.
Where is it?
Shirley and Berkeley, they're on the James River below Richmond. So it's about another half an hour past Richmond. And if folks, the reason I'm telling everybody about this is you don't have to be a member of the class to sign up for this trip. So we have a few seats available on the bus, and if you're interested, call the great folks down at the Senior Center Travel Office. They're always really friendly on the telephone, and the number there is 974-6538.
There you go. We're talking with Rick Britton. He joins us every week on the program to talk a little Civil War history. It's 14 minutes after 4 o'clock. Happy Friday. So Fort Stedman.
Fort Stedman.
The Battle of Fort Stedman. I've never heard of this. I mean, I've heard of Wilderness and Chancellorsville and Fredericksburg,
but
Fort Stedman.
Fort Stedman, March 25th, 1865. And I put it on the list for a number of really great reasons, but it's kind of in there as a placeholder to talk a little bit more about the siege of Richmond and Petersburg. So it's in there so we can talk a little bit more about it. But also, it's really the last major offensive of Lee's Army of Northern Virginia, March 25th, 1865. So think about it. The war here in Virginia only has a few weeks to go.
Yeah. So this is the last offensive of the Confederacy in Virginia.
In Virginia, right. The last offensive. And, normally over the wintertime, the armies would kind of shut down. You don't have active campaigning in the wintertime. And so as the spring of 1865 is coming about, Robert E. Lee and his officers realized that they only had three options. They could, number one, they could surrender to Grant and Meade and the Army of the Potomac. Robert E. Lee is not going to surrender without a fight. Second option is to try to get away from Richmond and Petersburg and join forces with the other major Confederate army that's operating here in the East. And they happen to be in North Carolina at the time, defending against William Tecumseh Sherman. And that's the Confederate army under Joseph E. Johnston. So they felt if they could get away from Richmond and Petersburg and join forces with an army that was approximately the same size, then they could perhaps defeat Sherman. Then they perhaps they could come back and defeat Grant and Meade.
So they would give Richmond up then.
Yeah, it's kind of a wing and a prayer. But if they put these two armies together, and probably under the command of Robert E. Lee, of course, and it's not a probably, it would be under the command of Robert E. Lee, because by this time the Confederate Congress had put him in charge of all Confederate armies in the field. So if he's there in the field, he would be the equivalent of Grant, which means he would take over. That would give them a chance against Sherman, and perhaps then come back and fight and defeat Grant and Meade. Definitely, it's a wing and a prayer. The other option is to fight where they are, and they would have to do it quickly. And when I say where they are, I mean in the siege at Petersburg and Richmond.
And set the scene for us. The Grant's overland campaign has been successful thus far, coming down
amazingly successful
out of Northern Virginia,
right.
across Central Virginia.
Right.
And really has Lee pushed back up against Petersburg and Richmond.
Yeah, almost constantly moving by his left and then to the south, getting around Robert E. Lee's right and ever getting closer to Richmond, and eventually stealing a march on Robert E. Lee, getting his army across the James River and threatening Petersburg, which I've described before as kind of like the gateway to Richmond, capturing Petersburg, then taking Richmond, and then, you know, getting Robert E. Lee back out into the field. Robert E. Lee knew and had told some of his generals that if they ever got into a regular siege, it would only be a matter of time. So here we are in March of 1865, and they're down to these three options. One of the options is to fight right now, and that's what brought on the Battle of Fort Stedman. But let me just give you an idea. You know, this is only the second battle in the Siege of Richmond and Petersburg that we've talked about, but there were plenty others, and I brought a list. This is just a short list right here. Of course, there was the Battle of the Petersburg Crater. There was a fight on the Weldon Railroad, the Battle of Globe Tavern, Reams's Station, which was also known by a lot of other names, the Battle of Hatcher's Run, Dabney's Mill, Deep Bottom Run, also Newmarket Heights. We talked about that one. That one's also Fort Harrison, Darbytown and Newmarket Roads, plenty of other battles.
And these are all just battles as Grant finally got close enough right up against Lee's army.
Right, and different attempts at different parts of the Confederate line, to break the Confederate line. So here's the basic idea.
Wouldn't have Lee been a lot smarter earlier on to get out of the Richmond area and say, look, we're trying to preserve the army, not Richmond.
That's right.
You know, because they were trying to preserve Richmond.
Yeah.
When they could have bought some time, who knows what would have happened.
Oh, sure.
If they said, look, we're going to try to preserve the Confederate army, and we're going to go do that elsewhere.
And we've talked about this a little bit before. And yeah, that if given Robert E. Lee the choice, his choice, that would be his choice, absolutely, because he feels that he has a much better chance in the field where he can actually maneuver. See,
yeah,
in a siege, you're completely tied down. And that would have been his choice, his number one choice, except for, you know, his boss, Jefferson Davis, is up in Richmond. That's the Confederate capital, and it's a political reason that forces him to dig in and defend Richmond and Petersburg.
We're talking with Rick Britton. It's about 19 minutes after the hour of 4 p.m. So take us now to the spring. Winter has broken. Spring is coming in here.
Oh, yeah.
In 1865, Grant is right up against Lee's army at Petersburg.
Right. So here's the basic idea. If you can imagine where Petersburg is, and Petersburg is on the south side of the Appomattox, it's about 25 miles south of Richmond. And it's fairly close to the confluence of the Appomattox and the James. Fort Stedman was a field fortification in the Union lines to the east of Petersburg. So if you're looking from the Union lines encircling the south of Petersburg, Fort Stedman is to the right center of the Federal lines. This was picked as the object of this attack by the man that Robert E. Lee put in charge, General Gordon, who is definitely one of his most aggressive remaining generals. It was picked because of where it is, its location, but also it was fairly close to the Confederate lines. It's only a few hundred yards away from the Confederate lines, and the preparations for this attack would be done at night, and they'd be able to accomplish quite a bit. Clear away some of the abattis, clear away some of the obstructions between the Confederate lines and the Union lines in the middle of the night, and hopefully as quietly as possible, not to give away to the federal defenders that there's a major attack coming. He chose it, Gordon did, for another really important reason, and that is that right behind Fort Stedman, several hundred yards, are some major military roads. One of the things that you have to do when you're conducting a regular siege operation like the siege of Petersburg and Richmond is once you dig in, you've got to connect all those entrenchments just behind, because just think about it. The Army's going to be there for a while, and this siege lasted 10 months. The men are going to be there for a while. You got to get supplies up to them. You got to get ammunition to them. You have to feed them at the front. And, of course, right behind the trenches at the front are going to be all these encampments. So you have to have transportation between them. So there are major military roads built behind the Union lines, and some of those are right close behind Fort Stedman, and also a military railroad that the Federals had constructed to bring up, like I was just saying, ammunition and foodstuffs and uniforms and things like that that the Union Army required. So here's the idea. Gordon has been given a fourth approximately of the infantry of the Army of Northern Virginia. So they concentrated a little over 12,000 men right opposite of Fort Stedman. The idea is to attack it, capture Fort Stedman and several batteries on either side, then penetrate. Remember, it's usually not enough to break the enemy line. You really have to penetrate and go deep into their lines and create a much bigger hole.
Well, we've seen examples in so many of the battles you've talked about where they broke the line and
penetrate.
Couldn't get guys in there because they lost so many guys breaking the line.
Exactly, and that was the problem with the crater, remember? Yeah. They got in there, they took a portion of the Confederate lines but couldn't penetrate deeper. That was the same problem with Pickett's Charge. They actually took the federal lines on Cemetery Hill briefly, Cemetery Ridge rather, but couldn't penetrate deep enough to really make a difference. And then, of course, it was thrown back. So the idea here at Fort Stedman is to take Stedman, batteries on either side, penetrate deeper, and then break that communication, break the railroad, break the road communications to the left of the federal lines, meaning that if that was held, Grant would have to shorten his lines because his headquarters is at City Point, which is way over on the right of the federal lines on the James River. That's where his commands are coming from. That's where the Union ammunition and everything is being dropped off. Stuff is being brought up the James River and offloaded right there at City Point. Huge wharf, huge docks. Capturing something on the right center means he's got to shorten his lines because the left of his line then would be out of communication with the right and out of communication with him. So once these lines were shortened by Grant, then Lee felt that he had a better chance of getting away from Richmond and Petersburg, getting away, getting out of this siege, and perhaps joining Joseph E. Johnston's army in North Carolina.
So this last big Confederate push now in the spring of 1865 is Lee's beginning of his maneuvers to get out of a siege position, a totally defense position at Richmond.
Right. So of the three options, he picks 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get out of here. Let's get away from Richmond and Petersburg, and let's do it by fighting right now. Right now. Let's not wait till the spring progresses any further. So elaborate preparations in the middle of the night, as I mentioned earlier, abattis and things were taken down. The obstructions in between the Confederate lines and the federal lines. Parties went out ahead of the assault columns with axes to bring down more obstructions, some small parties, 3 100-man parties. And then this assault force, and they were able to take Fort Stedman, and they were able to take the batteries on either side. So initially, again, like the crater, initially hugely successful in the dawn and the pre-dawn hours, hugely successful. Then they sent out these columns to try to find some other forts and some other trench lines that were supposed to be deeper into the federal lines, and they were not able to locate those places in all the smoke and in the dusk. They weren't able to locate the places that they were supposed to capture. And so they get, you can imagine, they get counterattacks come in back against Fort Stedman. Grant is able to concentrate numbers. The mortars start lobbing in the shells. So it's, in a way, it's very similar to the story of the crater and the loss of the Battle of the Crater. And then in full daylight now, Gordon and the remaining men in his attack force have to retreat back across the lines. When they get the word to fall back, they have to retreat back between the lines. And by this time now, as they do this, they have to pass through a withering crossfire from either flank. So of the 12,000 men that made this assault, about 3,500 were killed, wounded, and captured. Most of that number captured, about 1,900, 2,000 Confederates captured, because they, a lot of these guys, they get over there, and as the Federals come at them, they realize, now's my chance, you know. I don't want to run back through that crossfire. Now's my chance, and they threw up their hands and put their weapons upside down up into the air, which was a sign of surrender.
So yet again, another example of and we've seen this countless times, you know, in these stories you've told us of initial Confederate victories that in the end really didn't get them anywhere.
Like the last one at Cedar Creek.
So you feel like you're winning a little bit, and then, you know, it's
and then it completely turns around. Yeah. So initially, a huge Confederate success, but in the end, the loss of 3,500 men that Robert E. Lee couldn't replace.
And, of course, this just was the forward, I guess. This is the introduction to...
This is the preamble.
Our next conversation.
That's right.
Which is...
Five Forks.
Five Forks, the beginning of Lee rushing, trying to get away from,
absolutely,
from Grant's army at Richmond.
The beginning of the end.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.